Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
It's another episode of Lost in the Static. Scott will not be joining us this week. Instead, Charlie the Fister McMullen is back. He seems to be on all my shows recently.
Can't shake me. I'm like a happier version of the Krabs.
Yeah, you are a very happy version of Krabs.
And only half as itchy.
And speaking of Krabs, if you don't want to get Krabs, you could order something from adamandeve.com. Use the promo code STATIC to get 50% off of a single item, 3 free DVDs, free United States shipping, and a free mystery gift. Might even be crab remover. I don't know. So, little burp there. On that note, use the code STATIC at adamandeve.com.
Although, in all honesty and fairness, if you already have crabs, it will not do much to remove pre-existing crabs.
All right, if you want to get all disclaimery on
that. I don't want them to have any kind of a false advertising lawsuit on their hands.
Fair enough. Very fair. So, Charlie, you're a comic book fan. I'm a comic book fan. I save all the comic book topics for ones when Scott's not on, because Scott is not a comic book fan, so I can't really talk comics with him. I can with you, right?
Indeed.
So, what comics do you like? I don't mean, like, what ones you're currently reading. What are some of your favorite comics or characters?
Well, if we're talking big two, my favorite Marvel title is Daredevil. Has been for going on 15 years now. I just really like the mythology behind Daredevil. I like how, his dad, like, really tried to raise him as a single father. I like how, he lost his sight. But, I mean, if you want to talk about overcoming obstacles, it doesn't get much more pathos-laden than Daredevil.
I'd give you Elektra if you're going in that timeline. I mean, she overcame death. A little bit more of an obstacle than blindness, I would think.
Yeah, but I mean, she was Greek and her name is Elektra, so that, take that with a big grain of salt.
And she was played by Jennifer Garner, because that makes sense.
Yeah, why not? Let's get someone with the bluest possible fucking eyes on the planet to play a Greek.
So, okay, if Daredevil is your favorite book, Marvel, what's your favorite DC? Or do you have one even?
I didn't have one for a really long time, because I like DC, I like Justice League, and, I'll even read Teen Titans every now and then. I mean, it gets a lot of shit for being a mostly younger kids title, but, I mean, it's really well-written book. But I didn't have one for a long time, but then the more Justice League I started reading, the more I kind of got into Green Arrow, so I looked up some of his solo books, and Green Arrow is a really good character.
How far back did you go with Arrow?
Not that far back. I went back about 2002, 2003.
Oh, okay. So you're not into the Mike Grell era yet.
No, not quite.
Because the Mike Grell era, I mean, we've had Mike Grell on the show for fuck's sake. I absolutely love the stuff he started in 1987, where he took Green Arrow out of the DC universe and plunked him into Seattle in the real world. Green Arrow was no longer fighting junk superheroes and villains and mad scientists. He was fighting junkies and rapists and serial killers and social crimes. That is an amazing run. Start with Green Arrow, the Longbow Hunters, and then move into the regular series, which Mike Grell wrote from issues 1 through 75.
Is that when he, like, by excessive force, knocks some sense into Speedy when he catches him shooting up?
No. That's back in the 70s. That was in the Denny O'Neil, Neil Adams run.
There we go.
Yeah, the Speedy stuff was the 70s. This was the 80s. This was Mike Grell and Swamp Thing were the first of the two really dark, were kind of taking the characters out of the main DC universe characters. Mm-hmm. It was the first of those.
Well, and when you said Neil Adams, it reminded me, even though, like, I'm kind of picking up an interest in Green Arrow now, I think Batman is pretty much everyone's favorite DC character. Not a fan of the Batman. Why?
I've never been a fan of Batman, and this is before the movies, any of that stuff, so it's not I mean, you know how people like to call me contrary. So it's not like a just contrary thing. Honestly, I think the best version of Batman is when he was the leader of the funny Justice League and he was the straight man.
Yeah, I can see that.
That I think was the best and most accurate use of Batman when him and John Jaws were the pretty much the only serious characters in that entire book.
John Jaws is never ever going to say anything funny.
Actually,
not in our lifetime.
Well, I mean, that's the era of Beetle and Booster and all right. Their insane, crazy. Did you ever read the Geffen Demetis run of Justice League?
Actually, that reminds me of something weird. I was just talking with Tom Bad Guy about this today, because Tom Bad Guy and I work in the same office. And a couple weeks ago, he did this thing on eBay where he bought 1,000 comics for $200, and they shipped them to him in, like, these giant boxes. He's been giving me duplicates of, like, anything he either already has or does not want. Like, he gave me, like, this whole run of Mystery Men and Neil the Horse and, like, really weird shit like that. But let's see here. Monday morning. That would have been yesterday morning. There was – when I went to my desk, there was just this issue of Justice League. It was Destiny's Hand number 1 of 4, I believe.
Is that the one with, like, the space original Justice League on the cover and, like, a space background?
Yeah. It's got, like a totally backlit flash.
Yeah. I believe that is issue 71. And that was actually right after they stopped being funny. That's when Dan Jurgens took over as writer. And yeah. That's the one with the alternate Justice League where Hawkman cuts Sinestro's arms off and steals the ring and all that shit.
Oh, yeah. Like, I was, like, taken aback. Like, I was reading this because Hawkman –
fucking brutal, wasn't it?
Yeah, because Sinestro was accessory to a museum robbery. I think it was Wizard and who else were trying to steal some Egyptian artifact to take control of over everybody's minds or something like that. It didn't get – that's how – that was the setup – but it didn't really get into it. But Green Lantern and John Jaws bust in. They stop everyone. Sinestro pops out. He was like their guy and their assassin in hiding. And Sinestro escapes. Hawkman finds him, beats the holy shit out of him, breaks his arm.
Breaks his face, too, with the mace.
Like completely – yeah, he smashes his mace right into his grill, like breaks his nose. Picks him up, flies him from Gotham City to Nevada for the metahuman holding facility or whatever it was that was there. And when he drops him off, he says, like the guards there say, what about his broken arm? Should we get some medical attention for him? He says, I want you to cut it off at the elbow. Make it look like an accident. And he takes his power ring and just jets.
Uh-huh. Okay. Do you have the later issues in that? That story?
I only have that one. Because oddly enough, when I went up to Tom later after I read that, I was like, thanks for that Justice League book. I was reading it. Really weird stuff. And he goes, I didn't give you a Justice League book. So apparently
it was Jowski.
It might have been Jowski. But Jowski's not really into comics. I don't know where he would even find that.
Because Dr. Destiny, more or less – this is, by the way, audience, most of this episode is going to be us nerding out. So just deal with it.
Strap in.
Dr. Destiny basically got a hold of – okay, there was a while where it looked like John Jaws had died, and there was another character that Blood Wind or something like that. It was a black dude that came to take Superman's place after Superman died.
Yep.
And it was really John Jaws in disguise the whole time, and he had like this crystal that Dr. Destiny stole, which allowed him to alter reality. So that's what you were seeing, was like an altered reality of the original Justice League, where Hawkman's a super uber, you know, uber conservative. I mean, like the kind that would call Bill O'Reilly unpatriotic. And,
right.
And like Green Arrow is a super uber liberal to the point where he's just completely worthless and all that. And it was a pretty good story, but had kind of a disappointing ending. It was almost kind of like they just ran out of idea at the end of it.
Well, in the issue that I had, the really disturbing scene was you cut to like a mission control in China somewhere. They're about to launch nuclear missiles. It wasn't even at America. I don't remember who they were launching the nukes at.
I think it was North. It was one of the Koreas, I think.
It probably was North Korea. But right after they initiate the launch sequence. The silos are opening, missiles are about to fly. The Flash busts in with the Atom, Ray Palmer, on his shoulder. The Atom shrinks down, gets inside the console, finds the right wire, pulls it. That closes the silo, but does not stop the missiles. He jumps out. The Flash takes him out at hyperspeed. They get away just in time. Nuclear explosion on the China, like whatever Chinese equivalent of NASA is.
Yeah, I remember that. And then Green Arrow starts freaking out over they killed millions of innocent people or something. And Hawkman's like, big deal. They were just slant eyes anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Hawkman's like, cut the bleeding heart shit.
Yeah.
And at this point, Hal Jordan is vice president of the United States. The president is having a nuclear, like, just a complete psychological meltdown because the superhumans are becoming drunk with power. He doesn't know what to do. So Hal Jordan is like, well, why don't you take a vacation? I'll take over for you here. And Green Arrow is just losing his shit because he sees everybody becoming corrupt all at once.
Uh-huh. See, when I read that storyline, and now keep in mind, this is like 3 or 4 years before Dark Knight Rises, the Dark Knight Returns sequel came out.
The Frank Miller one.
Right. And I just kept thinking, this Justice League story, this is what Dark Knight Rises should have been.
Yeah, I could see that. Because
Dark Knight Rises has the same general tone, but Frank Miller had lost his mind at that point, and Dark Knight Rises was fucking terrible.
Okay, I do need to step in. Dark Knight Returns. If you say Dark Knight Rises, people that are listening to this that aren't big readers, they'll start thinking of the movie. And they might get confused. But I have a lot of affection for the Dark Knight Returns. I really like
it. Dark Knight Returns, I love. I absolutely love that. I thought the sequel was shit.
Yeah.
Dark Knight Returns, I think, is absolutely goddamn brilliant.
Okay.
It is brilliant. The sequel that came out in the late 90s, that was just insanity. Frank Miller had lost his mind at that point.
Yep, that was post-coke, post-alcohol.
Yeah. So no, I'm not pissing on Dark Knight Returns at all. I fucking love that book. I just reread it. I reread it recently so I could watch the movie, the two movie parts, the animated movie parts, and God, it holds up even more today than it did, I think, in 86.
I've not seen the animated movies with is it Peter Weller doing Batman's voice?
Yeah. The movies simplify certain things. They take out certain things. Such as they take out all the internal monologue, which really makes some scenes lose their punch, and they still have all the killing. And I'm honestly surprised Nazi nipples made it in. Nazi nipples actually made it in there, which surprised me. But then they censor Green Arrow's best line, "Hiyo, goddamn Silver," from the book when he's beating up all the army guys.
Yeah,
is "Hiyo, yippee Silver" in the movie.
Do you think that's like a John McClane reference or something?
I think it was okay, we can have women with swastikas painted on their nipples. We can shoot people point blank in the face. We can throw them off buildings, but we can't say goddamn for whatever reason.
But you do not take the Lord's name in vain.
Yeah, it was one of those, really, that's where the line is drawn in this? Really?
Yeah, it seems misguided, but I don't know, because those movies were put out by Time Warner, and I'm sure they've got some kind of Christian controlling interest nowadays.
Well, speaking of like Marvel and DC, which genre or which universe do you like better? Overall, I'm not talking about individual characters, individual stories. Like, if you were just you on the street and you had to live in the DC or the Marvel universe, what do you think would be the safer, better, cooler universe to live in? The Marvel you or the DC you?
Marvel you. I don't know. I just – because it just seems like characters would not only interact more, because both labels did that. The characters would interact. But in Marvel, actions have consequences. You know what I mean? Like, because if Matt Murdock had retired from the law and just quit being a lawyer like he's threatened to do multiple times, then that would have put in motion – a chain of events that would have like sent the whole Fantastic Four to prison.
Well, okay. Speaking of that, did you ever read What If?
What If? I don't think I did. I read House of M, but I don't think I read What If.
What If was two different series that Marvel did that asked those kind of questions, like what if Matt Murdock had retired? And it was a one issue, no continuity kind of thing. And they had a brilliant one. What if Punisher killed Daredevil? And it had one of the best, most unexpected, I gotta admit, I didn't see that coming, chain of event endings I'd ever read up to that point.
What was it? Because I know that's almost happened like a bunch of times.
Basically, he ended up killing Daredevil by mistake. So, he didn't mean to. He like knocked a building over on him or some shit like that. He didn't mean to. So all of the Marvel Universe is hunting him down and whatnot. He can't kill any criminals because he's constantly running into Luke Cage or the Avengers or the X-Men or somebody trying to bring him to justice.
Luke Cage would beat the shit out of him if he killed Daredevil.
He accidentally unmasks Spider-Man, and so the Silver Samurai goes and kills Aunt May and Mary Jane because he beats up Spider-Man, throws him off a building, and then when they take him to the hospital, they scan his prints and find he's Peter Parker, so the newspapers get wind of that. So Frank finally realizes he's backed into a corner. He makes a final assault on the Kingpin, and as the Kingpin snaps his neck, Frank's jacket falls open and he's wearing a bomb that says, "If you can read this, I'm dead and so are you." And it blows the entire Kingpin's building up. And I went, that was pretty fucking cool, actually.
Nice. See, that's what I'm talking about. Like, not only can Marvel do continuity better than DC, like in terms of the ripple effect and how this shit affects other shit, but they also do complete lack of continuity better than DC. Like, Marvel will periodically release just these alternate universe one-shots that have no bearing on any ongoing storylines at all. It's just for the sake of entertainment. And one of the best ones I've ever read was recently. Tom Bad Guy had picked this up at a Barnes & Noble. It was Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe. Have you read this?
Not that one, but I've read Punisher Kills the Marvel Universe.
Right. They have one for Punisher.
I'm assuming this is either a sequel or a pseudo remake or something like that. I mean, Frank Castle blows up the goddamn moon with almost all the villains on it, for God's sake, at one point. It's so brutally over the top, it's hilarious.
Right. Well, see, it was kind of like that, and I think there was even a reference or two made to the Punisher one. But in the Deadpool one, see, because Punisher is not funny. Deadpool is funny. So they had a really good time with this. It was just so bizarre. Professor X and the X-Men had picked up Deadpool and brought him to an asylum where this doctor takes over his treatment. And he tries to brainwash him to turn Deadpool into his own assassin. And something snaps on the doctor's head and his head opens up and there's this little tiny psycho man who's been controlling the doctor. And Deadpool just picks him up. He says, "Well, I'm all ready to be released. These forms just need your stamp of approval." So he's holding this tiny dude in his hand and just smashing him into the papers. Blood everywhere. Stamp, stamp, stamp. And he escapes from the asylum, and there's just all these news reports coming in about Marvel heroes and villains both getting killed. And in one of them, I think they threw this in just for shits and giggles, just to see if anyone's really listening. He had roasted and eaten Howard the Duck.
Well, speaking of that, and I'm not changing the subject, did you read Marvel Zombies?
Yes.
Have you read all of them?
I've not read all of them. I read an issue here and there, just whatever I could find at the newsstands, but I did pick up the hardcover of Army of Darkness versus Marvel Zombies.
Okay, so when Howard the Duck ate not our Ashley Williams, the Ashley Williams of the Marvel of that Marvel universe, remember when he was eating his brains?
Yep.
It just made me think of that.
Yeah, it's weird. I think they just, whenever they do alternate reality timeline type stuff, I think they just throw Howard the Duck in because they can. Like, just because
he's a main character in the Marvel Zombies stuff now. Because the Marvel Zombies eventually, they have Deadpool's severed head as well as a couple other main zombie characters that have found a way to jump dimensions through Man-Thing's dimensional portal in his swamp.
Yep.
They're able to jump to different dimensions and infect those. So our S.H.I.E.L.D., Morbius, a bunch of the supernatural characters, the ones that cannot be turned into zombies, like there's Machine Man, Jocasta, Morbius, Satana, characters like that, along with Dum-Dum Duggan from S.H.I.E.L.D. and Howard the Duck is the leader of the team. that's going from dimension to dimension trying to stop the zombie Deadpool's head from spreading the zombie plague.
That is fantastic.
And they had the best meta reference I have ever seen in a Marvel book in the final issue.
What was it?
They land in our world, where Marvel comics are comic books, and it ends with somebody reading the book.
That's
beautiful.
That is beautiful, but Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe takes that one step further. He, at the end of that, he goes through some sort of portal, and he ends up in the Marvel writer's room where they're coming up with the ending of the issue that we're reading.
Okay, I can see that. I can see that. Well, okay, and again, not changing the subject. Did you ever read Sam Hamm's 1985 Watchmen script back when Terry Gilliam was trying to make Watchmen in 85, 86?
I know of the script, but I did not read it.
Do you know what the ending was?
No.
Okay, first of all, it was so not Watchmen that everybody was offended by it. By the way, and I'm not joking, Terry Gilliam wanted Robin Williams to play Rorschach. I totally could have seen that. He wanted Robert De Niro as the comedian. Again, I totally could have seen that.
I could see Robert De Niro as Eddie Brock, but let's see
Eddie
here.
Brock? Venom?
Oh, no, not Eddie Brock. Eddie, shit, what was his last name?
I don't remember. I just know the comedian, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't Eddie Brock. But Robin Williams is Rorschach.
Yeah.
This was 85, you said?
Yeah, this was like 85, 86, 87, so this is just off of Coke, Robin Williams.
Right. This is the serious drama bearded Robin Williams we're talking about, like from Awakenings.
Yeah, well, a little before that, but yeah, that Robin Williams. That's who he wanted for Rorschach.
I don't know if that would have worked, man.
But okay, so this one, the comedian's alive the whole time, and they're basically a superhero team, okay? It's got almost nothing left in common with the original book. But at the end, the ending that Sam Hamm wanted was the biggest brilliant fuck you to the audience I've ever seen. And I will always respect the man for going with this ending, which probably is what got him fired off the project. Dr. Manhattan explodes.
Mm-hmm.
Rorschach, the comedian, and Silk Spectre 2 get blown into an alley, land in the real world, in our world, and they walk up to a newsstand in their costumes with everyone looking at them, and they pick up the final issue of Watchmen that shows them landing in the real world.
Wow.
Now, is that not both brilliant and a fuck you to superhero fans at the same time?
In equal levels.
I would have liked to have seen that Watchmen movie. I mean, Terry fucking Gilliam, man.
Oh, that would have been
80s Terry Gilliam too.
Yeah, that's like what? That's like Fisher King Time Bandits.
That's like Brazil Time Bandits Terry Gilliam.
Yeah,
because Fisher King was 91.
Yeah, it was.
So this was pre Fisher King. So it's like shit. Yeah.
Oh, totally.
I really do like when they go with those kind of endings, although. There are times when I just wish they would end comics, like the Marvel Zombie stuff. As far as I'm concerned, that was over a long time before they got to the point where they are now, and they just kept finding dumb ways to drag it out, you know?
Hey, as long as Walking Dead continues to get ratings, someone's going to want to push that forward.
Well, then what do you think about all these big crossovers, since we're going to talk endings here? Did you read Civil War?
Yeah, not in its entirety, but I kept up with it as much as I could.
Were you as disappointed with that goddamn petered out, we're not even going to make a real ending that they came up with?
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
It was like, because I was totally on board. I was back into Marvel, and then that ending, I went, what the fuck was that?
Right. I mean, because when I was reading it, I got up to the point where, Matt Murdock and Jennifer Walters were against each other in court, and at some point, Tony Stark had made a new suit for Peter Parker.
That big, the Scarlet Spider or something with all the legs coming out the back where he looked ridiculous or something?
Yeah, all the weird legs coming out. I'm like, well, that's kind of weird, but they might redeem it, you know, by the time they get to the end. And then I stopped reading for whatever reason. I think I just couldn't find any more issues of it. But a friend of mine had kept up with it the whole time, and eventually I asked him if I could read his old issues, and he goes, dude, you can if you want, but don't even bother. I was like, why? He goes, because the ending is bullshit.
The ending is one of the biggest cop-out endings to something so huge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm not just talking about because it's not the ending that, you know, it's not the side I wanted to win winning. It was how it happened was so contrived. And so, well, we're under a deadline. We got to end it.
Yeah, I know. It's something that was thought up really close to 5 o'clock on a fucking Friday.
Well, because I think that's the problem that comics have today more than they did then. Same thing that TV shows do. The same thing that Lost, Twin Peaks, and The X-Files that killed all of them. We're making it up as we go along.
It's because comic books are popular now, so there's more people paying attention. I kind of liked it better when nobody was paying attention and the writers and artists can get creative. They can get risky.
Exactly. And now everything is so structured. I've not read the entire storyline of this because I couldn't. I just couldn't. One more day.
Oh, one more day.
Okay, for those that don't know, One More Day was how Marvel just raped Spider-Man. Because for whatever reason, and J. Michael Straczynski, who wrote it, has outright said this was a dictate from editorial. This was not his decision. He only had to write it and take all the flack for it, unfortunately, too.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, for whatever reason, the audiences, because they were getting into the Sam Raimi movies and whatnot, they didn't like reading about Spider-Man married. They wanted him to be a swinging bachelor again, and they needed to find a way to undo it. So to save Aunt May's life, Peter literally makes a deal with the devil to completely destroy his marriage. It never happened, and no one in the Marvel Universe ever remembers he was married to Mary Jane except for him, so he can have a little bit more time with Aunt May.
Right.
That betrays Aunt May's character, that betrays Spider-Man's character, and that definitely betrays Peter Parker's character, doesn't it?
And Mary Jane's character, to an extent.
Well, she didn't have any say in it, so...
Yeah, I know, but I mean, everything that was put into the character up to that point just kind of went out the window.
Yeah, that I will never forgive Marvel for that.
No, that was like Clone Saga level bullshit.
And no, that Clone Saga's a fucking masterwork compared to One More Goddamn Day.
Right.
No, fuck that. Well, then what do you think about alternate universes? Since we were talking about those earlier, like, did you read the Marvel DC crossover? I'm not talking about the Amalgam stuff, the one from a couple of years ago that was, I think, by I think George Perez drew it.
I believe George Perez and a few other people did it, because there was a bunch of different titles. I didn't see that crossover. Amalgam is what I did see. Like, I saw the big issue where the heroes from both labels were fighting.
Oh, and that Wolverine Lobo thing is fucking bullshit.
Well, it wasn't Wolverine Lobo. It was Wolverine Batman. It was Darkclaw.
No. When all the characters were fighting, Wolverine beat Lobo three panels. Because remember, the winner, each outcome was voted on by the fans.
Yeah.
Lobo's killed entire planets. He actually is able to punch Superman and make him bleed.
Lobo
gets killed in three panels by Wolverine? Fuck you, fans.
But there's, like, going to be five people out there that are going to vote for Lobo to win. And it's fucking Wolverine, sir. Nobody is going to vote against Wolverine.
But it doesn't make – and I know we're talking comic books and we're both nerds. It doesn't make any logical sense. Like I said, Lobo can punch Superman and make him bleed. Wolverine doesn't stand a fucking chance.
These two mutated people from other planets. This does not make sense, people. Well, come on.
But, I mean, like, you know, that kind of stuff I think sometimes can work really well, such as going way back to 82, the New Teen Titans X-Men crossover.
Yeah.
I loved watching Deathstroke just take the X-Men a fucking part.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I liked that. But, I mean, if, you know, because the Amalgam books, I don't mean to change the subject, but I've actually read those, so I might have more to say about that. Lobo the Duck was pretty awesome. Did you read any of those?
I don't remember. I tried a couple. You know what? One of those where they actually made new books out of them. I actually enjoyed a few of the Valiant Image ones.
Yeah, those were pretty cool.
I actually, like, I thought Wildcore, where they took the Wildcats and the Hardcore and put them together, that was pretty, especially because if you read Hardcore, it was just brilliant how Maniac, the one Hardcore character that got killed in the first issue, was the only survivor of the crossover. I thought that was a little bit of poetic justice, you know?
Yeah, and since then, I haven't seen anything that, like what we were talking about earlier, you can take risks like that when you don't think anyone's paying attention. And that might have been the last, you know, pure instance of that.
Well, and, you know, to go back to a book you really like, and to a writer I used to at this era, go back to when Frank Miller took over Daredevil back in, like, 80, 81, I think it was. I know his core run was in 82, but I think he started in 80 or 81.
Yeah.
That book was dead. That book was on the verge of cancellation. And what he was doing was so different.
Yeah,
he had whole issues that barely had any dialogue in it, or issues that were all dialogue, or issues where Daredevil didn't even appear and it was all about the villains, and issues from the villain's point of view where Daredevil's, you know, from the storyteller's point of view, the villain and all this. And he took chances that I really don't see being able to be taken today. I really don't.
No, that shit would definitely not
You'd
fly today.
You'd never be able to take a Daredevil book and try something that innovative again.
And the biggest innovation, like the biggest risk I remember from that run, was after Bullseye killed Elektra. I mean, she was resurrected later or whatever. But after Bullseye killed her, he fell from the ledge.
He was Daredevil dropped. He didn't fall. He was dropped.
Daredevil had him, and he willfully let him go. I mean, fuck, heroes didn't do that back then.
And then that also led into the great Child's Play crossover where the first time we got to see Frank Miller write the Punisher.
Yep.
When he popped in for those four issues, which I absolutely loved.
Yeah, he did some really good shit with the Punisher.
And I don't think you'd be able to do that today. Just like when with Mike Grell or on Green Arrow, or good God, Alan Moore and Steven Bissett on Swamp Thing.
Yep.
They took it over in the early 80s. That shit was so different than anything else mainstream comics were putting out. But okay, we talked a lot about mainstream. Let's talk about the indies. Do you think the indie scene is as strong as it was, say, in 86?
No, I'd be hard-pressed to say it was as strong as, like, the heyday. Because, like, in 86, you had, like, Flaming Carrot. We were talking about him the other day. You had, like, Too Much Coffee Man and, you know, like really cool shit like that.
And you also had Grimjack and John Sable and the Turtles and Cerberus. And you had Gru and Star Slayer. And there were some Mr. Monster. There was all these amazing indie books that now, and I'm not being facetious, almost all those books are Image books now. They're literally being published by Image nowadays. It's not the same.
Especially, I think the biggest loss of that was Madman. I thought Madman was a great title until it got picked up by Image.
And, you know, I know the company is kind of a joke now, and I think they're going to go bankrupt early this year once they lose the Star Wars and Indiana Jones license. Dark Horse was an amazing company when that kicked up in 86.
Yeah, Dark Horse was good. I remember I was the only person, like, of the people that I hung out with at the time, I was the only one who was excited when The Mask came out in theaters.
Even though it was spelled wrong?
Yeah, it was very much spelled wrong.
M-A-S-Q-U-E, but...
Right. But, like, no one knew who that was, but I had been reading the comics, and the movie was...
The movie's tame compared to the comics, too.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked the movie. I thought... I thought Jim Carrey was really good in it, and I liked how they did. They picked up the same vibe of The Mask, just extrapolates the inner self of whoever wears it. I liked how they captured that in the movie, but it was a whitewashing of the comic book, because the comic book got really dark and violent.
The comic was in fucking sane violent.
Yeah.
And, like, one I really liked, which I still think this would make an amazing movie. Did you ever read Black Cross?
It sounds familiar. I don't think I read it, but I remember hearing about it somewhere.
It was, I think the guy's name was Chris Warner, something like that. He appeared, Black Cross appeared regularly in Dark Horse Presents, right. And I just absolutely loved the Black Cross stuff. That was so, those stories were so goddamn good. And then you added Mr. Monster and the American and all this. Dark Horse had such a strong stable of original characters, and I'm not bitching that they got these licenses. It all started to go downhill when they picked up the licenses for Aliens, Predator, Terminator, RoboCop, Indiana Jones, Star Wars, yeah. And I love the first three Alien series. I love the early Predator stuff and all that. But I think the company grew too fast. And right. I think they became the place where the licenses go and all the small stuff got pushed to the background.
Yeah, it's like when a child star gets successful at a young age and ends up like on coke with whores and heroin and all kinds of stuff like that. Too much success too fast will fuck you up because you're not grounded.
And I'm hoping that they're going to go back to that because they've already started to. The new Dark Horse Presents comic, I am loving the living shit out of.
What kind of stuff? I haven't read Dark Horse for a really long time. Like, what kind of stuff is there now?
They've got a whole lot of original stuff as well as bringing back a lot of old stuff. Like, Mr. Monster is back in those pages. They brought back a whole lot of characters. There's very few licensed things other than they've had a few Predator stories and Sin City's still running in there. And they recently had a really good post-apocalyptic Tarzan story.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I really want to read that.
It's got the cover with Tarzan with, like, a destroyed building overrun with plants, and he's holding a fucking laser gun, and I'm going, this is awesome.
This is what Tarzan should have been all along.
God damn it, yes. So you've got that, and I think Marvel is obviously reclaiming all the Lucas properties, right. And they've already lost the rights to RoboCop. The rights to Terminator are rumored to not be renewed. They're losing all their licensed properties, and I hope that forces them to go back to the originality they had in the 80s.
We can hope. I mean, I think maybe this is the kind of renaissance that needs to happen every couple of years to just sort of reinvent shit when it starts to eat itself from the inside out.
Well, what do you think about the indie boom? Do you agree that that happened too fast after TMNT's success?
I think it happened too fast to an extent, but I mean, new material is new material, and anytime there's like a boom, whether it's indie comics or even indie film, like in the mid '90s.
It's Tarantino indie film boom, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Or even like leading up to Tarantino, like with Spike Lee and Jim Jarmusch and stuff like that. Anytime there's a boom, you're going to have to sift through a lot of shit to find the good stuff.
Well, because do you remember after the Turtles got popular, all of the knockoffs, Adolescent Radioactive Black Belt Hamsters,
Street Sharks, for fuck's sake.
Oh, well, there was a whole bunch more of those. And it was just all these books that wanted to capitalize on the Turtles' success. This is pre-cartoon, by the way. This is just the comic of the Turtles. It was unheard of for an indie book to go into a 10th printing back then.
Yeah.
But the Turtles did it. That was just insane. And those old Turtle books, in all honesty, they say they hold up pretty good, actually.
It was because Kevin Eastman is an original voice. I mean, you can't really argue with that because I don't know. I mean, the good is worth finding. I mean, anytime you want to find something good, it's usually worth sifting through all the shit to get to.
Which is why I'm always on the lookout for. You got to remember, and I know you're younger than me, so you don't remember this firsthand. But in the late '70s, there was this big magazine boom. Do you remember that in comics where you had Savage Sword of Conan, Unknown Worlds of Science Fiction, Creepy, Eerie, Heavy Metal, all that kind of stuff?
Yep.
Those books are so worth it. Especially the Marvel stuff, because technically, see, the comics code was down to the dimensions. When they made like the Rampaging Hulk magazine,
yeah,
it was no longer considered a comic book. I mean, obviously you don't see Bruce Banner out there swearing and shit, but they were able to tackle much more serious topics. All of a sudden, you see Bruce Banner stumbling across junkies in the alley. There was one where he was staying. He was all strung out after getting like the army shot him when he was the Hulk full of like some kind of drugs. So he was basically like he was strung out when he turned back into Banner. And two guys tried to rape him at a YMCA.
Yes.
You were never going to see that in the Incredible Hulk book.
No, shit like that would definitely not fly. And in fact, I think that was when Green Arrow beat the hell out of Speedy for shooting up.
No, this was actually
This was after.
Yeah, because this is like 81, 82. The Green Arrow book you keep going back to is from 76.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yep, my mistake.
So, I mean, like...
But
you
no,
know,
I know what you mean. And in fact, I wonder why there wasn't more at that point, because that would have been a good time to bring back, like, Tales from the Crypt, like any of the EC comics, like Amazing Tales and...
Well, see, I think those had already come back just under a different name. I mean, really, Creepy, Eerie, and Vampirella were the modern inheritors to the EC library, really.
I still read Vampirella. I got a whole bunch of back issues of Vampirella at a Tom's eBay box.
The big magazine ones or the comic book ones?
The comic book ones.
Okay, because I've got some of the magazine ones, and I just absolutely love those.
Yeah.
I love the beautiful black and white artwork and just the style. And yes, I'm going to totally out myself as the biggest nerd ever. The smell when you open up one of those old magazines. Am I wrong? Are you going to make fun of me about that?
No, I'm not. I'm not disagreeing. I just think it's kind of cute.
You know, when you open one of those, it just smells like the 70s, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I mean, they say that smell is closest link to memory, and I get that.
You know, and like I love those. I remember when the Punisher first struck out on his own. You know, this is after he'd been in Daredevil and Spider-Man and stuff like that. His first solo appearance was in Marvel Preview, where they gave him his own story to see if he was a strong enough character, you know, that he could work on his own. And holy crap, did they use the fact that he's not technically in the Marvel Universe at this point. That was some brutal shit. I mean, he murders a hooker that's sent to his room to kill him.
Oh, yeah.
You're not going to see that when he's guesting on Spider-Man?
Totally. That was like that's the comic book equivalent of like International Waters.
Yeah, and I just so love those Marvel magazines and Heavy Metal. And, you know, speaking of Kevin Eastman, he's owned Heavy Metal for 25 years now. I remember buying Heavy Metal years before I was able to legally do so.
Right.
Because for whatever reason, my bookstore, even though Heavy Metal was stored with Hustler and Playboy and stuff, they never had a problem selling me Heavy Metal. I'm 15 years old and buying Heavy Metal. They just considered it like, oh, it was a comic book, whatever.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're in a small town, probably very similar to the small Colorado town where I grew up, I had a convenience store that stocked shit like that. And they just figured, okay, well, he's not 18, but no one else is going to buy this shit.
Yeah, a sale's a fucking sale, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So what older books are you looking to get into? Or older characters, older titles, older runs that you've had recommended to you either by me or Tom or somebody else that you just haven't had a chance to grab yet that you're looking for?
Let me think. I've been reading Naughty Bits, which wasn't really a narrative. It was more like a magazine. It was just a bunch of different stories. Some characters were continuous. Insomniac Theater I've been getting kind of into. I've been looking for more Too Much Coffee Man.
Yeah, you were telling me that the other day, that you were really getting into Too Much Coffee Man.
Yeah, Too Much Coffee Man was great. The first time I saw it is when I was going to film school. I was living in Nashville. This is about 2000, 2001. There's a comic book store in Nashville. It's called The Great Escape. This was a great fucking place. Like, this was like my comic book bar mitzvah when I was there. I was there, well, because I got the Wolverine origin story from the beginning from this place.
All right, I got to ask you, which one was that? He's had a dozen or so different origin stories.
This was the, I believe, unless they've done one since then, this was the most recent one that started in colonial times.
Oh, okay, because I remember the one with the Weapon X, and then they retconned that, and then they had that great Frank Miller, Chris Claremont 4-issue one, and then they retconned that. So I don't even know Wolverine's official origin at this point.
Well, no, this was the Miller Claremont one that was in Japan. That wasn't quite his origin story. That was just before the X-Men. No, the origin story that I was talking about, it was drawn, I believe, by Joe Quesada.
Oh, I hate his art.
You hate his art? How can you hate his art?
I don't. It's too anime imagey.
Okay, then I have a recommendation for you. Look up Guardian Devil. It's an 8-issue arc.
Okay.
The first comic book writing that Kevin Smith ever did. And I know you have mixed feelings about Kevin Smith. You don't out and out hate him, but you're not a huge fan. But this was really good. Like, this explored Daredevil, the character, more than anything else I've ever seen. Like, this is what got me into Daredevil. Because you didn't hear anything about him until Kevin Smith decided he wanted to take...
Would that be late 99, 2000? Yeah. I actually think I might have read some of those when they were new.
And
the cover of the first one is got like Daredevil in some weird pose throwing one of his truncheons right at the camera, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
Okay. I used to have that one. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that one was drawn by, it was penciled by Joe Quesada and inked by Jimmy Palmiotti. But I love the artwork in that. I mean, it was really good. And now Joe Quesada is editor in chief at Marvel.
Yeah,
I'm a big fan of the guy. I think he's a great artist, and I think he's made some really good decisions, a couple of bad ones, but mostly some good decisions. And the Wolverine origin story was one of them, because when that came out, I was reading this interview with him, because the Great Escape in Nashville, they got this newsletter. I don't think it was widely. I think it was just something that goes exclusively to comic book stores. But there was this interview with him in there about
comic
the Wolverine
shop news.
It might have been Comic Shop News.
Because I used to always grab that. They don't seem to, you know, since everything's internet now, they don't put that out anymore. At least my comic store doesn't get it. But I used to grab Comic Shop News all the time. So that might be the one you're thinking of.
Right. The internet was definitely around at this point, but it had not become the beast that cannot be fed that it is now. But there was this interview with Joe Quesada about the Wolverine origin story, and he said, I just want to get this out in comic book form before Hollywood fucks it up.
Okay.
And I have respect for that. So I was picking up every issue there. I wish I still had them, because they'd probably be worth a lot more now. But this was such a great place. And the more new titles I bought, the more I'd looked into their back issue section, which was like the warehouse at the end of fucking Raiders.
Oh, you mean my basement?
Yeah, your basement, pretty much. Only with less midget porn.
I'm not into midgets. I'm into fat chicks. I've told you that.
Okay, so this isn't your copy of Good Things Come in Small Packages?
No.
But that's where I found Too Much Coffee Man. And I've been looking for everything I could find, and I get the feeling, because it's not really well documented, but I get the feeling that there's a lot more out there. So if anyone listening to this knows where to find back issues of Too Much Coffee Man, then let us know.
Have you ever gone to the grandcomicdatabase.com?
No.
Go to Grand. Okay, I sent you that Punisher Batman cover on Geek Juice a couple of weeks ago. Go to that site.
That's
go to
my
that
laptop
site and plug
now,
in Too Much Coffee Man, and they'll show you everything that's been published by the character in every company, every year, etc.
Nice.
So Grand Comic Database.
Because that was self-published by Shannon Wheeler for a really long time.
Yeah, I never got into the character. I mean, I don't dislike him. I tried a couple issues when they were new, and it didn't sit well with me. If I can recommend a couple of older ones for you to look for that are probably going to be, you know, in the quarter boxes, I really recommend Roachmill. It was from Blackthorn and then later Dark Horse. It was an 8-issue mini or a 6-issue miniseries from Blackthorn and then a 10-issue miniseries from Dark Horse, and he had some side stories in like Dark Horse Presents and stuff. Roachmill, fucking love it.
What was the story?
It was basically like 1,000 years in the future, mutants are like literal pests. So Roachmill is like a normal Punisher looking dude with a big beard, but he's got a huge like a cockroach like extra arm that comes out, and he's like the number one exterminator of mutants in this future. And it's one of those ones that's both really funny and trying to be really serious simultaneously and manages to pull it off.
Nice.
It's one of those ones kind of like Judge Dredd, where you know it's serious, but there's so much satire involved. You do get it, you know?
There's like a lot of tongue-in-cheek in Judge Dredd. I've always liked that. But when you said Punisher with a big beard, I just pictured like Alan Moore himself.
Nah, Alan Moore's shooting up too much heroin to be the Punisher.
Well, yeah, now. But, you know, if you give him some time to work out.
Well, so, like I said, I'd recommend Roach Mill to you quite a bit. And Mr. Monster.
I love Mr. Monster too. And I'm really excited, like what you said earlier, that there's new issues coming out. That's awesome.
Yeah, he's got new stuff. I interviewed Michael T. Gilbert a couple of weeks ago. You guys haven't heard it yet because it's for the first episode of a new show I'm doing. Joining the Thume podcast, the comic book podcast, and the interview with Michael T. Gilbert's going to be on that. Cool. So when I interviewed him, he sent me like 3 or 4 pages in an email of like an upcoming Dark Horse Presents story, and I was just like fanboy squeeing over it.
Awesome.
And like Mr. Monster, I love to death. I just that comic is so goddamn funny.
Yeah, it was funny. It has heart. It was like really smartly written. It was there's nothing bad about it. I really liked Mr. Monster. One other title though, like it was sort of started out as indie, and I think it stopped just before it became whitewashed, like a lot of titles do. But Johnny the Homicidal Maniac.
See, I read the first issue. It didn't grab me. Did it get better after that? The first issue just didn't really do it for me.
It got way better. In fact, it started to get autobiographical because it was Yonan Vasquez that did the title. He used the Johnny character as like his own mouthpiece, but there were like a lot of autobiographical stories, and at times it diverged into like heavy drama with just like the insane violence as like a backdrop, but it was really cool.
Well, one that I know you're involved in already, kinda, would be, since you said you were reading Mystery Men from Tom, right?
Yeah.
Have you read Flaming Carrot? For the listeners, Mystery Men is a spinoff. They were supporting characters in Flaming Carrot.
Right. The only Flaming Carrot I've ever read is what I could get my hands on when it was out in the mid-80s.
Because Flaming Carrot, I recommend the shit out of it. That's a book that is absurd as you can think of, while still somehow being grounded in an almost weird reality. It's kind of like a Police Academy movie. It's kind of reality, but not really.
Well, I wouldn't compare it to Police Academy movie. I mean, because what I remember, because this was a long fucking time ago, like I haven't read it for years, like going on 15 years now. But what I remember about Flaming Carrot is it was absurd and it was ridiculous, but it played everything completely straight. Like there was none of the like the winking in jokes and bullshit like that. It sort of illustrated what I've always thought is the iron principle of comedy, is taking the absurd and playing it straight.
Yeah, because I mean, the Flaming Carrot, it's a man in a costume of a carrot that's on fire. He carries a gun filled with baloney that he shoots at people, and he wears he wears flippers in case he ever has to swim. This is our hero, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah.
And he never swam, not once.
No, he didn't. And then another one that's in that same vein that is actually, and I hate to say this because this really takes nerddom to another degree, Charlie, it's written by a guy who actually has a law degree, and if these things were real, these would be real legal arguments, and that's Wolf and Bird, Counselors of the Macabre.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I actually know about that one. It's a lot like another title that I got into. The last time I saw Lloyd Kaufman, this was in 2008 in Denver. I was interviewing him for Pulp Magazine here in Pueblo. He, the night before the interview, I was with him at Tromapalooza to raise money for Troma Dance. And he had signed and given to me an issue of Supernatural Law, which was a lot like that.
Well, Supernatural Law is actually – it's the same comic. They just changed the title after a while. Wolfenbird, Counselors of the Macabre, I guess, was too much of a mouthful. So they changed it to Supernatural Law. That's the same characters, Jeff Bird and Alana Wolf.
Well, there you go. I didn't know it was the actual.
Yeah,
same...
that's actually the same book, just later issues. I think like the first 30 are called Wolf and Bird, Counselors of the Macabre, and then after that, or somewhere in that era, they changed to Supernatural Law. But it is the same book, and that's written by an because that strip that started as like a weekly comic strip in a legal college like at a Harvard newspaper or something.
Yeah.
And it was by an actual legal student. So the actual case laws and that they use, even though they're talking about vampires and ghosts and monsters, are somehow realistic, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, like it's all based in reality. I mean, it doesn't – I won't say it makes it believable, but at least puts it in a context that we can relate to. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And unfortunately, they've been trying to make a movie of that for years. It's just been stuck in limbo.
That could be done – that could come out really, really good. Like, if you get someone like Mike Judge to direct it.
I could see that. I could see Mike Judge handling that decently, actually.
That would be
pretty
cool.
Because even though I didn't like Office Space, Idiocracy is fucking brilliant.
You didn't like Office Space?
I didn't like Office Space, but Idiocracy is fucking brilliant.
Yeah, Idiocracy was great. But the issue of Supernatural Law that Lloyd had signed for me, he's actually in. It was the like they were at the old Judges Club.
Okay.
Which is sort of like Ellen Quatermain's Explorers Club, but for district court judges. And they talked to like Judge Kaufman, who had presided over a case where the Toxic Avenger had to defend himself against sort of the Tromaville Police Department. And it was really cool. And it ended with another burgeoning lawsuit against the American Chicken Bunker, which is where Poltergeist took place.
I'll have to pick that one up because I stopped reading that for a while just due to budget concerns. I couldn't afford it anymore. I'll have to go and grab some of the. I'm actually friends with Batten on Facebook. I'll have to email Batten Lash and see if like I can get them directly from him.
Yeah, you could probably do that.
And because before you go to that, here's a tip for you people: if you friend these people on Facebook and you buy books directly from them, they're usually signed when they arrive in the mail. I've gotten signed stuff from David Quinn, Michael T. Gilbert, Stephen Bissett, Mike Grell. If you buy directly from the creator themselves, you get the shit signed at no extra cost. It's awesome.
Yep, I'm friends with Steve Yee on Facebook, and I've gotten all kinds of signed shit from him. Usually at a very good price. Like, if you can just send him a message and make a good case for yourself being a fan and not having a lot of money but still wanting to read his work, they'll cut you a deal. They're very good people.
Yeah, I've not met one of these people that's an asshole yet.
Speaking of trauma, though, did you read Traumatic Tales?
No. When was that? That's a couple of years ago. I have a vague memory of it, so I seem to remember like seeing it in a catalog or something, and I just never picked it up.
Yeah, this is like at least relatively recent. I mean, it can't be any. Any less recent than like 2005.
Okay.
I think that's probably the latest it could have come out. But like, it's really good. Like, they have a whole bunch of stories. Some of them are like, you know, 5-6 pages. Some of them are 10 pages. Some of them are just one page with no dialogue at all. But they're all comics based on trauma movies. And one of the really cool ones is you've seen Toxic Avenger 4.
Citizen Toxie.
Absolutely. The scene where they gather all of Tromaville's other heroes to take down the Noxious Offender, one of them is the Masturbator. And there is a really well-drawn, really well-written, written by Trent Haga, origin story for the Masturbator. And, oh my god, it was just so cool. Like, there was a no-dialogue, two-page spread of Rabid Grannies versus Children at Play.
I'll have to go pick that one up. No, I didn't know about that one. I know they tried to, I don't know if it ever came out, but, you know, because the production on Tales from the Crapper was such a clusterfuck. I know they tried to put out a Tales from the Crapper comic, but I don't know if that ever came to fruition or not.
I don't think it did. I think that was one of the casualties of the lawsuit when India Allen sued Lloyd.
Okay, because I remember reading something about how that was supposed to be a comic and it didn't happen, and I think Lloyd released like certain pages of the artwork on his website at one point, just to show people what it was going to be.
Yeah, whatever artwork he had, he posted on the Troma site, but as far as an actual book being printed and everything, they couldn't get that far.
Well, and then the last book I want to recommend to you, Elvira's House of Mystery from DC. Remember House of Mystery and House of Secrets?
Oh, yeah.
There was a 12-issue run in 1982 where Elvira took over that book.
Terrific.
And they're pretty goddamn good, actually. And there was even one due to literally just a side boob. The Comics Code Authority wouldn't put their seal on it because of a side boob in it.
For side boob?
For side boob.
God.
Yes.
Bunch of prudes.
Yes, for side boob. So we have run out of time. We've basically wasted this entire episode just being two nerds, and I hope you guys enjoyed it.
Yes, we've wasted our time and yours, but I hope it was at least entertaining.
So where can we find Charlie the Fister McMullen?
You can find me on geekjuicemedia.com, Facebook, Twitter, and keep an eye on Geek Juice in the coming weeks, because there's going to be a full-length comedy special of me and a few of my friends that we did a really good show here in Pueblo, Colorado, and I managed to get the whole thing on tape, so it's going to be great.
And you can find me, 1201beyond.com, you know that, 1201beyond, or 1201beyond@gmail.com is my email address, the show's email address, lostinthestaticshow@gmail.com. So what's your final word on nerding out on comics, Charlie?
Do it every now and then. It's a great salve to all the depressing shit that usually takes over our lives. Like, now it's like the last what the fuck we did, it's like that never even happened.